Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last spring, the Obama administration advised school districts that the federal non-discrimination law, known as Title IX, also protects the rights of transgender students to use restrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identity. The move was triggered by a law in North Carolina that required people to use the public bathroom that corresponded with their gender at birth. While the issue has been hung up in the courts since then, the Trump administration last week reversed the rule, leaving it up to states and school districts to decide what bathrooms are available to transgender youth. Washington Post education reporter Emma Brown has been covering the issue. She joins us now by phone. Welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be with you.
Title IX is the same law that requires schools to give girls equal access to sports and other activities in public schools, right?
That is, yes, and that's what it's been best known for most of its history.
How did the Obama administration determine that the law also applied to transgender youth?
So this was a process that began in the Obama administration as far back as 2010, and Obama administration officials said that they began meeting with students and transgender advocates and parents and educators and athletic associations, school boards associations back during that time period to hear about the challenges that schools were facing in accommodating transgender children and that transgender children were facing when they went to school. And so the guidance came out in, as you said, in May 2016, but there was actually this years-long evolution and sort of laying of the groundwork to get to that point. And the first really big turning point was actually in 2013 when there was a school district in California where a transgender child brought a complaint against the district because the child was not allowed to use the bathroom that matched their gender identity. And at that point, the Education Department's Office of Civil Rights, which is tasked with investigating federal civil rights complaints in schools, came to a resolution agreement with that school district. And the agreement said that this child was going to be able to use the restroom of their choice because of the protections in Title IX. So that was sort of the first sign that there was this sea change in the way that the federal government was going to interpret Title IX and its protections for transgender children. Although the courts have been moving in this direction for some time, and it all hangs on what is the definition and meaning of the word sex, mm-hmm. Because sex, you know, Title IX prohibits sex discrimination, and so it comes down to what do you, you know, what is who is protected by the rules prohibiting sex discrimination.
When the Obama administration was consulting with the parties involved in these issues, was there a lot of dispute over it? Was it just curiosity? Were there a lot of conflicts over it?
I think a lot of that was happening, in a quiet way. I don't think that the big public pushback really erupted until more like 2015, when there was a school district in Illinois that was resisting the department's efforts to have the department wanted this school district, based on a complaint from a transgender high school girl, to allow this student to change in the girl's locker room and to not have her go down a hallway to a separate facility where she would change on her own. So the school district resisted this, and the Obama administration threatened to strip their federal funding if they didn't come into compliance. And that controversy erupted in this town called Palatine, which is right outside Chicago. Mm-hmm. It's a suburb of Chicago, and became a really divisive issue in that community that then caught national attention. The school district ultimately backed down and allowed the student, under federal pressure, to use the locker room in this case, and since then, parents in that community have sued the school district to force them to stop allowing the student to use the locker room. But that was like a that was sort of the first time that there was that I can think of that there was this huge major pushback. And then, of course, HB 2, as you mentioned, in North Carolina, became a giant national story that really pushed this debate to the forefront.
We're talking about transgender students and bathrooms and locker rooms in the nation. My guest is Emma Brown. She's education reporter for The Washington Post. The Trump administration last week reversed a ruling or an advisory by the Obama administration, the Obama era administration, that called for schools to allow students to use the bathroom that they identified with their current gender identity, instead of what corresponded with their gender at birth. By the way, I just am reading now that Juliette Ivancho, that's a transgender woman whose sister performed at President Trump's inauguration, as the New York Times reports, it scored a temporary legal victory today or yesterday when a federal judge ruled that she and two other transgender students at a Pennsylvania high school must be given access to restrooms corresponding to their gender identity. How does that play into this, the news right now, Emma Brown?
That's a really interesting case because the judge in that case did grant this injunction that allows students to use the bathrooms that match their gender identity, but the judge said it's not on the grounds of Title IX because Title IX right now and its protections for transgender students are so uncertain, the judge said, that he or she could not say with any certainty that these students would be likely to prevail on that argument. So the injunction was actually granted on different legal grounds. And I think that goes to show there was a very long discussion in the opinion about how this is all really up in the air. And basically, we won't know whether Title IX extends in sort of the final analysis to protect transgender students until the Supreme Court takes a stand on that issue. And that, of course, could come as soon as this year. In Gavin Grimm's case, he is a teenager from Virginia who sued his school board because they did not allow him to use the boys' bathroom at school.
And that's the case that will be heard at the end of March before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, the Trump administration's decision to withdraw the guidance could end up affecting that case. It's unclear at this moment. But the Supreme Court could say, you know, because the federal government has changed its analysis, we're going to kick this back to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals and let them decide. Or the Supreme Court could go ahead and decide one way or the other on Title IX. So there's a lot of uncertainty about whether there will be a final decision soon, but there very well could be.
Are the arguments that are going to be made before the court in late March, if it goes ahead with it, will they be about that very the crux of the issue, which is the definition of sex?
I think so. There were two questions initially that the Supreme Court took up, and one of them was the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals right when they deferred to the Obama administration's guidance? Because what the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals did was they relied really heavily on the Obama administration's guidance that has now been revoked. So that question is essentially moot because it doesn't really matter now whether the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals relied too heavily. The question is the ultimate question of law, you know. And so, yes, I mean, that if as long as the case goes forward and the Supreme Court does hear it later in March, I believe that will be at the center of the argument.
Other legal challenges include one that popped up immediately from 12 states' attorneys general, including Ohio's Mike DeWine. Why did they oppose the interpretation? What's their beef?
The issue of whether it's the same sort of thing. It's Title IX and whether Title IX as a federal law extends to transgender students, or whether the Obama administration erred in interpreting this law, and essentially did the Obama administration rewrite the law with this, or attempt to rewrite the law with this guidance, which is not law, of course. It's just an executive action. So that's where that stands.
In the Trump administration, the Education and Justice Departments said that the administration wants to further and more completely consider the legal issues involved. Have they established a committee to do that? Is there some framework for that study?
That's a great question, and not that I know of. You know, and one thing that is notable about the way that they went about withdrawing the guidance is they did not say we think that this is wrong. They didn't go that far, but they did leave this sort of vacuum of interpretation, which means that for the time being, until anything different happens in the Supreme Court or something different comes out of the Education Department and Department of Justice, this really becomes an issue that's left to individual schools, to districts, and to states to figure out on their own, which means that the protections extended to transgender students varies widely depending on where you are. And, you know, if you see, or conversely, if sort of the privacy guaranteed to students, which is folks who don't like this guidance, felt like it was really intrusive and violated their privacy, also varies widely depending on where you are.
Is there a trend for the states to deal with this, or does it tend to be dealt with at the local level, or is there nothing that shows you a particular trend on that score?
Well, I think for a long time it was dealt with quietly by individual schools that, mm-hmm. you know, that came to solutions on a case-by-case basis or didn't come to solutions, and kids, suffered because it wasn't addressed. And you know, in the last couple of years, as this has sort of come to the forefront of the LGBT rights movement, there has been a real sort of backlash in the states. A lot of states considering bills that would sort of outline who can use which bathroom. And so this year, I think there are currently 14 or 15 states that have bills pending. But for the most part, you know, this is something that happens on the local level right now, and school districts on the coasts and in the middle of the country, some of them have taken very sort of transgender-friendly approaches and adopted very trans-friendly policies, whereas others have no policy at all or have policies that conflict directly with what Obama was trying to do with the guidance last year.
You wrote last week that parents of 8 transgender children from across the country have requested a meeting with President Trump and key administration officials, I would imagine, I guess, Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, to talk about the withdrawal of the federal guidance on this issue at the time, or have there at the time, I think there had been no response or little. What's been heard since? How are they responding?
As far as I know, there's been no response, although I have not checked back in the last couple days. So, mm-hmm. You know, at the time, the White House said basically, hey, Trump has been open to meeting with lots of different kinds of people, but they didn't know whether the president at that moment had seen that request. But, you know, this has been an effective tactic, at least in some states. Last year in South Dakota, the governor had on his desk a bill that would have limited access to restrooms for transgender students, and he then met with some transgender young people, and he ended up vetoing that bill after meeting with the young people. And so the advocates felt like, you know, hearing personal stories can be a really powerful way to sort of take this really abstract notion that seems very foreign to a lot of people and make it human.
And by the way, what is Trump's record on this issue? I know he doesn't have a record as a public official, but what has he said about it in the past? Do we have any ideas?
I think there was a great hope among LGBT rights activists and LGBT people that when he came into office, that he would be sort of a New York Republican, right? Like maybe fiscally conservative, but on this particular issue, not conservative. That he had said at one time he was going to be, you know, the best president for LGBT people ever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this was the first really important move that he made that showed, you know, that I think made people feel like he's not going to live up to that promise.
Although he didn't shut it down completely by leaving no advisory in place of the other, still leaves him open to possibly deciding on the side of LGBTQ.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the departments could come out and say that. And, you know, I think there was a reported schism between Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, and Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, on this issue. Sessions has been known for a long time as someone who opposed, you know, expanding LGBT rights, same-sex marriage, that kind of thing. DeVos, her family has given quite a bit of money to campaigns against same-sex marriage and other such campaigns, but she herself has sort of taken pains to set herself apart from her family in that vein. And I think how this comes out in the administration in some way depends on sort of who wins that battle within the administration.
Emma Brown, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Emma Brown is an education reporter for The Washington Post. We're talking about the transgender bathroom issue in our schools now that the Trump administration has rescinded the advisory that the federal non-discrimination law Title IX applies to transgender students and gives them the choice of bathrooms and locker rooms when it comes to their gender identity. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Last week, Trump administration officials reversed an Obama-era interpretation of the Title IX non-discrimination law, again leaving states and school districts to decide for themselves what bathrooms and locker rooms are available to transgender students. Coming up, we're going to hear from the administrator of a local program aimed at supporting LGBTQ youth. Joining us now is the president of Citizens for Community Values, Aaron Baer. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Also by phone, the executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, Mara Kiesling. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Mara Kiesling, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has criticized the Obama administration's guidance as lacking sufficient legal basis. How do you determine the legal basis for this in Title IX?
Well, the way I would do it, the way the Education Department did it over the course of 7 years before deciding to release the guidance, which Attorney General Sessions undid with almost no staff in a week. So I would be confident in saying that I would not do it the way Jeff Sessions did it. It was slapdash, not based on any legal reasoning or even looking into it. They just knew they wanted to do it and did it.
Are you comforted at all by the fact that they didn't replace it with some other advisory? They just nixed it and left something of a vacuum there to be filled?
Yeah, well, what I think we all know around the country is the administration's a mess right now. I don't think they could have come up with a replacement if they tried. It doesn't mean they won't come up with a replacement. And by the way, more importantly, it doesn't mean that the guidance is still not the smart way for schools and school districts to treat transgender students and avoid Title IX liability. The guidance is still correct. It's still based on best practices. It's still deeply grounded in Title IX case law. And the big effect of what the Attorney General and the President did and the Secretary of Education was confuse a lot of schools and open them up to lawsuits and hurt a lot of kids. So we'll fix it.
Aaron Baer, what about you? How do you determine the legal basis for this? Does it not belong in Title IX? Does it need to be worked on more if it is going to be out of Title IX?
Well, I think what's important when we're looking at how this was done, the reinterpretation of Title IX under President Obama, I think it should be concerning, especially for folks that are concerned about the Trump administration and what he might do with executive power. Because really what President Obama did was he took a law that was duly passed by Congress in 1973 that was directed at prohibiting discrimination against women and ensuring equal opportunities for women in education and in sporting events and things like that and dorming and all those types of facilities. And they reinterpreted that word sex to include something else, to include gender identity. That is a dangerous precedent to set, to say that with all the research, even with 7 years of research or however much time they put into it, that an executive branch, an executive agency can fundamentally just rewrite law. You can imagine what President Trump could do with that.
Administrations tweak laws and interpret laws all the time.
Yeah, but it's one thing to say that sex, which has been understood and was understood when they passed it in 1973, meant biological male and female, to now say it means whatever you identify as. That's a drastic change in policy and actually fundamentally undermines the purpose of what Title IX was about, which was including, which was ensuring women have equal access to facilities.
How does it undermine that?
Well, because if anybody can be a woman based on what they identify as, based on what they claim on, then it doesn't protect anybody. The idea was here to create a special, to create a class and to ensure that this class that has a long history of discrimination against them and unequal opportunities against them, to ensure that they have every equal opportunity as others. So when you open it up and I'd say everyone is now technically under that, if they claim to identify as that gender, it protects nobody. And again, so this is what the bigger issue here that I'm most concerned with, and I think people who are opposed to President Trump should be very concerned with, is that if an administration can just say, hey, this word now means something else, you can imagine what they can do with that.
So you'd like to see a concerted discussion about the definition of sex?
Absolutely. You know, broadly speaking, you know, to be clear, I don't think this is the right policy anyway. But if we're going to make public policy, we should use the systems in place. We should go through the Congress. We should go through state legislatures and have the people and the their elected officials put these laws into place.
Mara Kiesling, what about that? Even though the Obama administration invested 7 years of research and discussions and study into this issue, they still, by fiat, sort of changed the definition of a word. Mara?
Okay. Oh, yep, I'm sorry. Absolutely not. Aaron is just is absolutely dead wrong. To be very clear, students are not protected by Title IX because of this guidance. The Department of Education did this guidance because students are protected by Title IX. As Aaron knows, because I think he's an attorney, we don't set up civil rights laws to protect a type of person. We protect a category or a characteristic. So we protect based on race and religion. When we pass a religious anti-discrimination law, it protects all religions, not just Christians. When we when we pass Title IX to protect based on sex, what this argument is about, the argument that I think Aaron would make, is that this is about sex-segregated facilities, which has the word sex in it.
Mm-hmm.
Title IX says you can't discriminate based on sex. We are talking about sex. The courts have been ruling on this for decades. The Obama administration didn't reinterpret anything. They were asked by school superintendents and principals, how can we best deal with this influx of trans students? And after what happened in North Carolina with them passing their bathroom bill and all, and the federal government suing them, how do school districts avoid Title IX liability, and how do they do right by the students? And the Department of Education looked around at best practices. If you read the guidance, you'll see that it's really about best practices. And they did not reinterpret Title IX. They did not reinterpret sex. They gave some helpful advice based on decades of court rulings. And that's how our civil rights laws work. Courts interpret them.
If there's decades of court rulings, then is it going to be pretty cut and dry once they go before the U.S. Supreme Court in late March, Mara Kiesling?
Well, that's what we don't know. You know, yes, there are lots of courts have ruled, but it isn't final until until the Supreme Court weighs in. We think the Supreme Court will weigh in the GG versus Gloucester County case, which is going to have oral arguments on May 28th and a decision hopefully sometime in June. But the Supreme Court could also just punt and send it back to the lower court.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, even though there are decades worth of rulings on Title IX, until the Supreme Court weighs in, it certainly isn't final. That's correct.
We have an email from Cynthia, and I'll turn this to you, Aaron Bear, first. She writes, I ask any political leader, where have trans people been using the restroom all along? Where is the crime wave perpetuated by trans people in restrooms and showers? This is another fabricated crisis by elected leaders to strike fear and manipulate citizens. So, Aaron Bear, where is the problem? What have we been doing up till now?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a really important aspect of this question. Primarily because I think what's important here is that we all want the same thing. We want a safe environment for our kids to go to school.
What's unsafe about transgender
people
using?
Well, this is the point necessarily here, is that we're not necessarily saying that it's the transgender kids that we're concerned with or we think they're necessarily a threat. The idea is that these policies, first and foremost, are entirely subjective and are open to abuse. And furthermore, when we're talking about these policies, we need to consider all the children involved here, not just the transgender kids. You mentioned earlier that we're talking about transgender students, and I think it's important when we're talking about this policy, we're not just talking about transgender students. In the Gloucester case that Mara mentioned, there was an amazing brief that was filed by victims of sexual abuse that said, listen, we're not concerned necessarily about a transgender person preying on us, or we're not calling them sexual predators or anything like that. Just the mere presence of male anatomy, and for a lot of these women's cases, just the mere presence of male anatomy in private facilities with us is traumatizing to us. And those children and those people deserve to have their voices heard in this debate as well.
Mara Kiesling?
Yeah, well, I am so deeply feeling for folks who have been victimized that way. And there's certainly a lot of transgender victims of sexual assault also. You just can't simply say children cannot be students, they cannot go to school because a couple of other students may be triggered by it, particularly when it was over 320 domestic violence, interpersonal violence, and other violence groups signed a letter last year explaining this, saying, hey, transgender people are not a threat to people who have been victims of sexual assault. They should not be used as a scapegoat for this. If you really want to solve the problem, here are some things to do. I feel really sorry for the folks who have been sexually assaulted. That's not what this is about. And to say that, you know, transgender students can't go to school, and that's what we're talking about here. If a student cannot use the bathroom at school, they cannot go to school. They cannot be a student. They cannot be a full member of society. And that can't be – you can't do that just because somebody sometime might abuse the system.
Well, I fully appreciate what Mara's saying here, but I would just disagree with how she's characterizing the situation in many ways. There's plenty of policies in place that school districts have been putting in place for decades. You know, the transgender issue, as I'm sure Mara would agree, has been around for a long time, and school districts have found ways to accommodate these schools, sometimes in good ways and sometimes in not helpful ways to protect those students. The problem with President Obama's policy and the policy generally speaking is it's kind of like, you go to water your garden, instead of using a water can, you use a fire hose. And you try to deal with one small issue with a sweeping policy. There's ways that we can create a safe environment for transgender students without impacting the privacy rights and safety concerns of other students and parents. And to say that it's not about those other students is to ignore their voices. And I think what's important when we're talking about this issue is that we need to listen to all the voices.
Is there a case of somebody being traumatized in this way that you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have cases both in schools. There's one family in a Midwestern state that's asked to have their privacy remain protected of a mother who has kids that she got out of foster care and eventually adopted, elementary school and middle school students who were sexually abused as kids. Mm-hmm. And when they were going to go on an overnight trip, it was a sixth grade overnight trip, and the mother went to the school district and said, I need you to guarantee to me that my daughters won't have to be in rooms with biological males. And the school district said, no, we can't do that. So then those school
districts. You mean with boys?
With boys, exactly.
Because they were sexually abused by boys?
They were sexually abused by boys. And they went and wanted to go to the school district and say, listen, my kids cannot be having to bunk with boys, with biological boys in the same room. And the school district said, we can't guarantee that because of the Obama guidance. And so really, those students deserve to have their rights and their concerns heard and protected as well.
This is the same thing as the bathroom issue?
Absolutely. You know, the guidance issued by President Obama was much broader than just bathroom use. It was locker room use, shower use. It was overnight stays on trips. It was athletics events. It touched on all of these different various areas. And my point is, and I think a lot of people that are concerned about the Obama policy, is that there's ways that we can address these transgender students' concerns without violating the safety and privacy concerns of other students.
Mara Kiesling, what about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is the same conversation we have with all minority rights. I'm not even going to bring up examples, but I mean, it's all minority rights. People feel traumatized if they have an immigrant who's a physician. Just because some people are not comfortable with difference does not mean minority people of any kind can't participate fully in society. What the best practice is in corporations now, it used to be that if a transgender person was there, they would just fire the transgender person.
Mm-hmm.
But then it became there would be a separate bathroom set aside that the transgender person had to use that bathroom. Now what it is if there's somebody who doesn't want to be in the bathroom with the transgender person, they're the ones who have to go to the inconvenient set aside bathroom down the hall. I am so sympathetic to students who have whatever kind of problems they've had, whatever kind of experiences they've had, but it doesn't mean we can take it out on minority students who are just trying to be kids.
I want to turn to a caller now, Sue in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. First of all, thank you to Aaron for peeling the onion. This is definitely about redefining what biology is, XY, XX. So thank you, Aaron, for pointing that out. And I wanted to encourage media to peel that onion because not everybody in the LGBT community is in support of President Obama's redefinition of gender, specifically lesbian.
Are you speaking as a member of the LGBT community?
I am. I'm speaking as an African-American lesbian.
Okay.
And so my response to that is, what is fact and science is fact and science. One does not feel like a female. One is a female. It's not.
Okay, so you're denying the whole transgender existence then. You don't think it's real?
No. Because it's not my place to, pass an opinion on what somebody understands themselves to be. What I'm saying is you could draw a comparison with Rachel Dolezal. So that Rachel feels like she is African-American is not my business. Whether she is or not can be determined, right? We can run a DNA test, correct?
Well,
so I'm supporting Aaron in peeling that onion, and his point is absolutely on target. What President Obama did was redefine what is female.
Okay.
So this isn't just about bathrooms.
Okay.
If my 80-year-old mother is in a hospital room, is she going to be rooming with a man who thinks he's a woman?
I don't know. That's a whole other question that hasn't come up yet. Title IX deals with schools and children. But Sue in Columbus, thank you for the call. Mara Kiesling, the issue of support among the LGBTQ community has been an issue. I mean, it's not necessarily fully supported across the board.
Well, I think that's probably true in any community. I mean, there are folks who would like to think that Christians are against LGBT people. It turns out that some Christians are, and most Christians are not. So are there LGBT or are there LG people who are not fully informed about trans people or who are uncomfortable in some way? Yeah, absolutely. But to answer specifically to Sue, mm-hmm. If people would just look at the science of this, the conversation would be over. There are actually six common karyotypes, K-A-R-Y-O-P-Y-P-E-S. There is not just XX and XY. People keep thinking, some people have this conversation and they say it's about whether you have this kind of genitalia or that kind of genitalia. Mm-hmm. It's about XX or XY. It's about so much more than that. But there are people who are just X, roughly 1 out of 2,000 people. There are people who are XYY. There's just more to heaven and earth than is dreamt of in your philosophy, mm-hmm. Sue. Science will always back us up.
It sounds like that's the conversation that needs to be had, and we'll continue this conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Last spring, the Obama administration advised school districts that the federal non-discrimination law known as Title IX also protects the rights of transgender students to use restrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identities. The move was triggered by a law in North Carolina. Well, it wasn't triggered by a law, but he'd been working on it. The administration had been working on it for several years, studying the issue of Title IX and how it applies in these cases. But after North Carolina passed a law requiring people to use the public bathroom that corresponded with their gender at birth, the Obama administration decision came out. While the issue has been hung up in the courts since then, the Trump administration last week reversed the rule, leaving it up to states and school districts to decide what bathrooms are available to transgender students. A federal judge ruled that a transgender woman and two other transgender students at a Pennsylvania high school must be given access to restrooms corresponding to their gender identity. How that applies compared to this is to be decided, I guess. Still with us is the president of Citizens for Community Values, Aaron Baer, and by phone, the executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, Mara Kiesling. Joining us now is the executive director of the Kaleidoscope Youth Center, Amy Eldridge. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you for having me today.
The mission of Kaleidoscope Youth Center is to work with young people to create safe and empowering environments for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning youth. It never really went into effect, the Obama administration rule. But how big of a deal was it when that interpretation was announced back in 2016?
It was a huge deal. I mean, I think that when that guidance went into effect, it was a real clarification that the federal government had the backs of transgender youth and students.
So what are the kids talking about now after the Obama rescinded that decision?
Well, you know, it really causes a—
I'm sorry, after Trump rescinded the decision.
Yeah. I think it creates a level of uncertainty, you know, about what's going to happen. So there's a knowledge that this administration does not have their back. But I think, you know, and there's been discussion about, you know, what is the meaning, you know, of this rescinded guidance. So we still do have Title IX, the rescinding of the guidance does not mean that Title IX does not support and back those students. It becomes more important, I think, you know, within school environments that the schools are talking about. For example, Columbus City Schools has come out and said, we're not changing our policies. You know, we changed some of our policies before this guidance came out. Mm-hmm. You know, Bexley Schools also has stated they're not going to change their non-discrimination policy. So this becomes important because there's this level of uncertainty even within schools that have stated their support for non-discrimination and for equality. But I think that even in those environments where those policies are there, it's still a really difficult and courageous thing for a young person to come out, you know, as trans-identified and to ask for recognition and support for who they are and within any kind of transition.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos said last week that the issue is best solved at the state and local level, that in many cases, local communities have found solutions to protect all the students, as you just described how Bexley and Columbus City Schools have addressed this. What are you protecting students from when it comes to transgender use of bathrooms? What are you talking about there? In a school like in the Columbus City Schools, is there still a problem if the district's already addressed it itself?
Well, there are, and I think that sometimes the bathrooms issue is important, but sometimes we are laser focused on that piece of what a young person needs in respect for their gender identity and their exploration and potential transition outwardly to be in alignment with who they are mm-hmm. inwardly. Because really, you know, we do see schools that are working to change policy. We see schools that are resistant to changing policy. And nonetheless, there's always a cultural piece and a need to support within the culture and understanding of things like respecting a young person's name, their pronouns, things of that nature. So it's important, and we know that young people who are transgender really face some tremendous challenges and demonstrate incredible strength in this process of discovering what it is in themselves, that what their gender is, how to express that, how to seek equality within all of their environments.
What do we know about Mara Kiesling, about the incidents of bullying and so forth of transgender students now? I mean, we were talking earlier with Aaron Baer about the fears some kids have that it's a trigger for some kids who have been sexually assaulted in the past by others, you know, by boys, girls by boys and that kind of a thing. But what about the risks that transgender kids have?
Sure. Yeah, it's really bad for kids. You know, we just did a survey of 28,000 transgender folks, and these were adults, I should note, but the ones who were retrospectively looking at how it had been in school.
Yeah.
77% of them said they had experienced some sort of severe mistreatment, verbal harassment, physical bullying, sexual assault, et cetera. The number that really got to me was that 17% faced such severe mistreatment as a trans person that they left their K-12 school. And we're talking all the time to parents and kids, and 4,300 as of late yesterday had submitted their personal stories to Secretary DeVos and Attorney General Sessions. And the stories are just heartbreaking. There's so many kids now who are not in school because they're being bullied, who are not in school because they're not allowed to use the facilities. I saw a teenager, talk to the state senate in North Carolina when they were passing HB2, and he just said the most profound thing. His name was Sky, and he said, "Every day I go to school, and I have to face kids bullying me, and sometimes I have to face staff bullying me. And now you're telling me the state senate is bullying me?" And that's how this can feel to people.
So, Aaron Baer, you've been talking about mm-hmm. the perspective of kids who, for one reason or another, would feel threatened by, the Obama era ruling on transgender bathroom policies in public schools. What about kids who identify as trans?
No, again, I want to 100% affirm that we do have an issue with transgender youth feeling bullied, feeling oppressed, feeling less than the reality that they were made in the image of God and are of infinite value. I mean, you see that in the reality that Among transgender youth, there's a 40% suicide rate. That's awful. But I think we have a disconnect here when we're talking about this policy of saying, okay, so we have an issue over here of people not being treated with the utmost respect and being bullied. And therefore, then we need to completely redefine all of these other policies in a way that dramatically impacts all other students' right to privacy and safety. At the core here, we have an issue of a culture and a society that doesn't respect one another, that doesn't treat each other as valuable. We've heard for years, too, when we're talking about these types of issues, that you can't legislate morality. That's a phrase commonly used to try to make people more moral. And I think that policies like this are a failed attempt, a bad attempt, if not a well-intentioned attempt, to try to make people more moral.
Well, you know, there used to be that argument when it came to interracial marriage, too. And there's a good movie out there right now about the Loving case. That was absolutely one of the arguments against it, that it was immoral and the state should have the right to ban that too.
Well, you know, I think it's—
I mean, could things change? Could the culture change?
Well, there's some things that the culture can change on and should change on. But then we have biological realities that are fundamentally different than what was happening with racism in the 1960s and racism still today. The bottom line, racism is arbitrary. And you're telling two things that are two people, two groups that are similarly situated, that they are different. And really it boils down to one group trying to exert power over another. Whereas in a case like this, you have individuals that are saying, listen, all I'm asking for is that my concerns are heard as well and are valued in this situation. There's no sort of economic incentive that you saw with race driven in here. There's not those same type of situations that you saw happening with race as you see with gender identity.
You know, it's interesting. I think that, there was a day when there was quite an argument around segregation and interracial marriage, that it was a biological difference or function, you know, and that was part of why, you know,
that was the argument.
That was the argument. And mm-hmm. and certainly, except among the most extremists, that's debunked. OK. And now when we look at what's happening here in terms of we have science that's demonstrating a change in our understanding of gender. And I think it's really important to look at the science and that we need to respond. And while I think the science is important and it backs the reality of people's lived experience, I think it is always key, even without the science, to truly listen to people's lived experience. It has validity. And when we ignore that, you know, we harm people. And so, I know you talked about when you talk about protecting others' privacy or other students' privacy, somehow at the cost of these transgender students' basic humanity, mm-hmm. to deny their ability to identify with the gender that they're experiencing internally, and to we do have the science. Mm-hmm. Those 7 years that the Obama administration researched this, they brought forth guidance both based on— it wasn't out of the blue. It was based on what was happening in the courts. And the movement of what was happening in the courts, as well as knowledge of best practices. We're not seeing this huge problem that's being expressed, that's happening for other students. We're not seeing that.
Got about 15 seconds here.
Well, I just want to say, generally speaking, I would dispute that both the science and the courts are settled on this. There's Johns Hopkins University. There's plenty of Vanderbilt University have put out studies that show that kind of conflict with some of the reports that are being discussed here. Okay. And the courts obviously have blocked this from going into effect. So the courts aren't settled on this issue either.
Well, we're going to have more conversations about the science. We'll have more conversations about the legality. For now, I have to say thanks to Aaron Baer, president of Citizens for Community Values. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And also Amy Eldridge, executive director of the Kaleidoscope Youth Center. Thanks for joining us today, Amy.
Thank you.
And Mara Kiesling, executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. Appreciate your time as well.
Thanks so much.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.